to the Puck Guys Podcast, the best place for top hockey news and insight with, of course, a little West Coast bias. Now, here are your hosts, Patrick Mahoney and Jason Lamb.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Puck Guys Podcast on this beautiful July evening where it's no less than 90 degrees the past 10 days. As always, it's the three of us, myself, Jason, and Eddie. How you guys doing?
Doing good. I didn't know it was always the three of us. I thought.
I mean, that's what it is from now
on. Okay, as always.
I mean, yeah. We don't have the intro yet, so we got to. I know. I promised that. Like,
we don't have the intro. And you say as always, and people are like, "Well, I didn't hear it."
That's weird. The girl in the intro said Patrick Mahoney and Jason Lamb, but okay.
But we got this interloper here from Canada, just squeezing in, doing whatever he
Toronto.
Wants.
So we got plenty to talk about. Some unfortunate news to kick off the show because it's just too rough to end on a show like this with that kind of information. But we got some free agent signings, a trade, and then we got some fan questions, and then obviously we'll talk some jersey retirement. But let's start with the sad news first. Goaltender, former NHL goaltender Ray Emery passed away, drowned this week from up at a charity event up in Ontario. Not sure the circumstances behind it, but just that's crazy. The guy was 35 years old and out with buddies and don't know really what happened, but out on a boat, I don't know what could go wrong, but it's really unfortunate he drowned.
Yeah, that's totally sad. And it's really kind of, you know, you would think unexpected, a 35-year-old athlete. I mean, you know, just a couple years or seasons removed from NHL and, you know, just a handful of years away from, you know, holding up the Stanley Cup with Chicago. The fact that, you know, you go swimming with family and friends and to pass that way is just, that's rough all the way around. It's so untimely and so disheartening.
Yeah, and he was just doing like a charity golf tournament too with a bunch of former NHLers, and even something like Max Domi was there. I think I believe Adam Henrique said that he was there too. Like a bunch of guys were there, and he was just hanging out, you know, trying to do some good. And it's really unfortunate to see, you know, like you said, he's only 35, and it's crazy.
There was a few moments in his career to talk about him briefly here that totally stand out in my mind. I got three of them.
I know one of them.
When he fought Andrew Peters, Andrew Peters went after him, a brawl between Buffalo and Philly, if I remember correctly, right?
And now Peters is not a goalie, correct?
No, Peters is an enforcer on Buffalo. He was a beast, and he ends up fighting Emery. Emery held his own, no problem.
He was smiling and laughing, I believe, while he was fighting him.
He smiles in every fight. He was an animal.
He would always train in the off season. They said he was like, he trained boxing and stuff like that. So that was one of the huge memories I remember. And then the next one was the unfortunate one for him, was when the Ducks played the Ottawa Senators in the final. And he was in net when the puck got lost in his skates and he kicked it into his own net in the final in Game 5. The Ducks go on to win a cup.
That's not his fault. That's Chris Phillips' fault.
That was bad. I know, but I remember him being in net for that.
Yeah.
The good news for him is that towards the end of his career, he was able to win a Stanley Cup, like you just said, Jay, with Chicago. So those are the big ones. And then, you know, he also played for the Ducks. And us being Ducks fans, I remember him there too. But the shining moments are the ones. Those are the three I remember the most.
I always remember him fighting Marty Biron. And it's like just smiling too when he's with the Senators. And then he destroys Marty. And then I think Michael Haley or somebody comes over and tries to fight him after that, and he just destroys him too. I mean, he was like an animal. I don't remember a goalie who would willing to fight as much as he was. Maybe like Hextall back in the day, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and even with Hextall, I mean, it was, you know, I haven't gone through every Ron Hextall fight, but it used to be, you know, goalie on goalie. But this dude would fight players. He didn't care. He didn't care what gear he had on, you know, the disadvantage that kind of comes with that. He was game for anybody. Probably my biggest thing that I'll kind of remember him from is the way he just ragdolled Braden Holtby around in that. I think they were losing 7-1. And just poor Holtby. I don't think he really wanted to fight. I think at the time I really didn't like it, and I still don't really like it, mostly because I'm a goalie, and I could tell Braden Holtby didn't want to fight. But Ray Emery just was tenacious, to say the least, when it came to fighting.
Oh, it's just tough too, the way that he ran his career. I mean, he was always up and down. He had injuries. He came back. It was a Masterton final. Finalist, rather. So, I mean, he's battled through some hard times. It's just a really sad end for him, and it's really unfortunate. You know, thoughts out to his family and friends and all that. It's just, it's a tough time for the hockey community, too. There's a lot of players that were there with him. So,
yeah,
and not much more you can say on that.
Yeah, and, you know, we're ill-equipped as our own people to handle a sadness like that. But, I mean, at least, you know, there's a new breed of goalie kind of coming out with new signings. I guess that's kind of a good way to segue into the next part.
Right into goaltending. This is just, honestly, it's just fucking baffling to me that Marc-Andre Fleury gets a 3-year deal. I don't know what else to say or how to start that. It blew me away. They gave him a 3-year contract. He signs. He gets a modified no-trade clause, $7 million cap hit. He's only behind Carey Price and Henrik Lundqvist in terms of money for this deal. $21 million. I don't get it. I just don't get it. I know that he was like the face of the franchise last year for the new and hot Vegas Golden Knights. The dude's 33. He still has another year on the deal he's sitting on right now. There was no need to go out and dump this money into an aging goalie who, in my opinion, is a concussion away from ending his career having severe issues. I feel like he's already had problems last season. And for Vegas just to throw money there, it was just puzzling to me. I don't like the deal whatsoever.
It's the run. It's the run they had, and the fact that he was so good leading up to the final that they feel like they have to give him this deal. But, I mean, who else would have really – he wasn't going to get more than that in free agency, you think, at 34. So I don't know who they're competing with this $7 million. I mean, he got a $1.25 million upgrade on what he already had at 33 or 34 when the contract – I mean, it's insane. I get it, but you would think, you know, they have Oscar Danks, they have – you know, Malcolm Subban, you would think they would want to pave the way for those guys to eventually make their way up. And now you plaster Marc-Andre Fleury for 4 more years. You know, I get they have the cap space, but that's slowly dwindling away for them.
Yeah, I mean, other than they don't really have much in the way to, you know, bring him behind them, you know, and that was kind of the issue a little bit you thought would be an issue when they started going down with the injuries. But I feel like Eddie said, this is more like a thank you contract, more or less. You came over as our number one guy. You left, you know, a two-time Stanley Cup winner, and you gave our fans hope. And that is something that we're willing to almost compensate you for with this, you know, upcoming contract. I don't think he'll be 35 when it kicks in. So technically, if he ends up retiring or has to, you know, goes on injury, they don't necessarily have to pay him. So they kind of lock.
He'll be 35. No, when it, or, no right. Right.
He'll
after.
No, he's 35. So he's 35 in like November or something. And the contract kicks in before that. So they kind of have at least a little bit of an out should something go horrifically wrong or whatever. But, yeah, that was pretty much a thank you for being the face of the franchise and really kind of almost propelling us, you know, that extra few million we're going to give you that no one else really would. Gives us a chance to win for sure. But at the same time,
does it?
You know, I mean, where
this
else?
This deal's going to look bad this year. He's not going to have the same year he did.
He's not. It was a career year, which is why you kind of, you know, scratch your head about why are they going, you know, longer.
Was it a
you
career
know, what
year?
Happens next year?
Was it a career for Marc-Andre Fleury? I mean, he's won, what, 3 Stanley Cups? It's not...
Yeah,
it was the best save percentage he's had in a long time. You're talking
about.
But
he didn't play half the season.
But he probably had his best playoff run until the finals that he's ever had. And then, you know, with playing with Pittsburgh, yeah, he's won 3 Cups. But 2 of them, he wasn't the starter. That was Matt Murray, the 2 most recent ones. The only one he actually won was back in 2009. So, I mean, for him, that was a career year and a coming out party. And like I said, I think they're just giving him a little extra money because I think they made more in him being their goalie and doing what he did than they're going to lose in those years. And I think, you know, if push comes to shove, he has to retire. They're not necessarily out a whole bunch of money.
That's his best save percentage in the regular season of his career.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to get better.
33 years old. So why pay the guy? Why
it's a
thank
you contract.
Trade deadline? Wait to the trade. There was no need to give him the money.
you're not like I don't think you're expected to do this good. Why not let Malcolm Subban try and take the reins this year before you give Marc-Andre Fleury $7 million over 3 years? Like
these GMs are nuts, man.
Give him a chance. Give him a shot.
See, but you guys, not you necessarily, Eddie, but Pat kept saying like George McPhee doesn't know what the hell he's doing. This is a horrible draft. This is bad. This team will be horrible. And then they just keep going. Why aren't they getting a goalie? They got injuries and they didn't get one. They kept winning. So I don't know. I'm willing to give him a shot and keep going, see where it goes. I'm devil's advocate here. I'm not exactly saying that this is going to go completely great for Vegas, but I feel like it's, it's just saying thank you for the most part.
I mean, dude, coke and a smile to Marc-Andre Fleury, man. Good on him for getting paid. I mean, you can't hate on that. But these GMs just handing out contracts left and right are absurd. let's go to Winnipeg and talk about Connor Hellebuck. Possibly one of the top, if not the top, rated U.S. goaltender behind John Gibson, for my money. Connor Hellebuck gets a nice deal here, boys. He gets paid. At 25 years old, he is making $6.16 million a season. And not only do they give it to him right after his ELC, but they lock him up for 6 years. This takes him well after RFA. So they're buying his years in free agency. But this one, I mean, it could go bad. And because he's only had one great year, but this could really be a steal if he turns out to have season after season like he did last year. Vezina nomination. And this was truly a coming out party for Connor Hellebuck. If this is the kind of style of goaltender he's going to be, and this could be a cap hit steal if he continues to play that way.
I would agree, especially with him being obviously, in my opinion, kind of the future of goaltending in the NHL. There's a lot of young. When I say young, it's a relative term, but he's 25. Gibson's 24, 25 as well. Those two guys. Are kind of the next step in goaltending along with Vasilevskiy and Matt Murray and that sort of deal. So I think they feel they've got one of the top four or five young goalies in the NHL, and they're locking him up for 6 years at a reasonable click if he kind of continues doing what he was doing. He's a big guy. He's got not only good technique, but he's also got that ability to scramble and make saves as well. So I put him up there in the upcoming years to be kind of one of those top-end goalies. And if you can get a top-end goalie signed for, just a little over $6 million, that's probably a good signing for a good young team that's really trying to make a push and went really far this year in the playoffs. I mean, they went to the conference finals. So, I mean, this is the next step.
Normally, I'd be worried about a team signing a guy after one good season, but the fact that he completely restructured the way he played. Like I think he hired a new goaltending coach. He did some off-season work where he completely changed the way he set up the play for the season, and it worked out. And now you would assume that he can come back and do that for the next 6 years, or at least that's what the Jets hope. And I mean, this is their guy. They don't have anybody else. They tried Mason, it didn't work. They tried Pavlik, it didn't work. They have Eric Comrie, who's a decent guy that they can have behind it, but Hellebuck seems to be the guy, and if he can have seasons even close to what he had last year and get, Vezina nomination after Vezina nomination, and, they're going to be a scary team. They already are, and it could be a steal down the road when you look at maybe what John Gibson ends up getting paid or what some of the other guys are getting paid, or even what Marc-Andre Fleury is getting paid at 33.
I mean, if you're going to take a risk, this is the guy to do it on, but it's just, you got to hope, right, that he doesn't all of a sudden, tank after one great season and goes back down, that's a possibility. But, I mean, he's been a highly touted prospect for a long time and well-known. So I think risk-reward, you got to do it, and you got to pay the guy because I don't think he's going to tank. I think he's just going to get better. He's a young guy, and like you guys just said, I just think it's worth it with his skill level.
Yeah, and most of the guys that are coming back on this Winnipeg team, almost everyone is the same coming back for the most part, at least for this next season. So they were that close to getting the Stanley Cup Finals, and then they're bringing back mostly everybody that's worth mentioning. And so he's going to be it'll look great if they, get to Stanley Cup Finals or, if they actually win it all, so.
Move that on over to UC Soros for the Nashville Predators. He gets paid a great deal. I mean, to me, it's a steal. He gets a 3-year, $4.5 million contract. That's $1.5 million cap hit per season. Perfect timing, because Pecorine is slowly going to be phased out, I feel like, in Nashville. He's slowly declining. I mean, UC Soros as a backup last year had a 925 save percentage. Season before that had a 923. He could turn out to be something special. I mean, obviously, when a guy goes from a backup role to a starting role, you just never know. And when you look at a guy like Scott Darling, I mean, I myself had to, you know, eat my own words when I thought he was going to be lights out over in Carolina and just, you know, fell apart. But yeah. That's another story. But UC Soros, I mean, I think the Predators did great here. He's 23 years old. They got him for the next 3 years. And I mean, yeah, it doesn't take him into his free agent or to his free agency years. He'd still be an RFA, but I mean, he could be the goaltender of the future there. And I think they're banking on it. And they got a steal, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think he was so impressive to the brass there that they were willing to let Carter Hutton go off to St. Louis. And you've seen what he did in St. Louis, and I think now he's with Buffalo.
Yep.
They were willing to let him walk, and I thought he was a really good goalie. Soros is another great goalie, and 23. So they've locked him up for three more years, where he gets into that 24, 25, 26 range, and then he's still a restricted free agent after that. And with that defensive core that they still have for, you know, most of the next 2 to 3 years, they're in good shape with him in there. Pecorine kind of falters, which I want to say, given that defense in front of him, Pecorine played outstanding for the most part. But at 35, he's going to just start to decline, in my opinion. And he kind of showed a little bit of that last year. So I think Soros will probably start getting the reins. And that's a great price to have as a starting goalie who can win you games like he can.
Yeah, and for me, what's so impressive about Soros, he's only 5'11". Like, I don't know how many guys under 6 feet are putting up the numbers he can in the NHL, at least recently.
Yeah.
I mean, Rene's earned himself with the Vezina win, like at least starting next season. It depends on how his season goes there, whether Soros takes over 2 seasons down the road or in the last year of this contract. Either way, even if he's a backup, this is a great deal. I'm sure there's more backups out there with worse numbers getting paid more than UC Soros is. I love his game. I think it's going to be a great deal for Nashville, and especially, like I said, if Rene declines, which is there's a very good chance he could because he was doing it at the end of last season and into the playoffs, they've got a guy who can step in and do just as well, and he's proven it. I mean, over like the 50 games I think he's played, his save percentage is over 920. So, yeah, he's definitely got the stuff to stick around.
It was with the goaltenders that Paul Campbell, when we had him on, this last season for Forever Mighty, talked about when we're talking about John Gibson, he brought up UC Soros as one of the guys he was really impressed with.
Yeah, and the other thing too is to consider, even though Pecorine, you know, will get the start because there's no way you sit a $7 million goalie or make a backup. That's the last year of his contract, and then after that, he's unrestricted. So, I mean, at that point, unless he has just a, you know, one of those contract year performances, you got to think that maybe Nashville's ready to move on to the next stage of their goaltenders.
So good on them. Let's shift gears out of goaltending and go over and talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning and talk about Nikita Kucherov and Stevie Y, who's been able to just make magic happen in Florida. Signs Kucherov to a monster deal, 8 years, $76 million, a 9.5 cap hit throughout it. But another one of those deals where there was still a year remaining on the current contract, and these GMs are so quick to go in and just re-sign their guys. I mean, you got to pay the dude. They totally ate it by giving him a bridge deal, right? I mean, they gave him a bridge deal on his current contract of 3 years, $14.3 million. Kucherov's been lighting it up behind Connor, as Jason would say, Connor McJesus,
the past
couple of seasons. And you got to pay the man. And that's just what you have to do in this situation. They pay through the nose for him, but scoring's at a premium in the NHL, guys. And I feel like this just had to be done by Steve Yzerman, and kudos to him to holding that team together. They're a monster, with or without Erik Karlsson, who we'll talk about in a second.
There's no way you can let him go. I mean, you have to bring him back. The way he's played with Steven Stamkos and what he's done. I mean, for years it was Steven Stamkos' team. And then ever since Stamkos went down with the injury, Kucherov had that monster year. He's just backed it up year after year. with, what, a couple hundred-point seasons back-to-back now. So, I mean, he deserves it. It puts him in a tough situation because, you know, they will have to sign Yanni Gourde. They will have to sign Braden Point at the end of next season. Eventually, they're going to have to sign Andre Vasilevsky, and they've got a lot of money locked up in Hedman and McDonough, Stamkos, Kucherov, JT Miller, you know, Tyler Johnson. They've got all these long-term deals with a bunch of guys, and they've got some very good young players coming up. But, I mean, at least for the next couple years, they don't have to worry about it, and I'm sure Yzerman will figure his way out of it. I mean, he's a wizard. He'll figure his way out of it. They've got, you know, Strawman and Coburn and Girardi coming off the books, so that helps. But some great piece of work by Yzerman.
Yeah, and speaking of Yzerman, I mean, you don't ever really come across former players that can actually do a GM job as great as he has done. Yeah. I mean, the way he's been able to re-sign Stamkos at 8.5, I mean, you may say they paid through the nose for Kucherov, but he's 25. That's 3 years younger than Stamkos, and they got him locked up for, you know, the foreseeable future. So I think they've locked down a lot of key pieces, and they all you got to do is just kind of hope your farm system or the younger guys kind of fill in that extra spot. So Stamkos is in, Kucherov is in, and then you've got Hedman and McDonagh defenseman. So, I mean, they've kind of got it there, and they're going to, after this next season, Strawman, Colburn, and Girardi, all north of 32 at that point, are unrestricted free agents that they can walk, and that's $12 million or so in available cap space. So, I mean, they kind of make up some of the money that's there. I think signing Kucherov for under 10 is a pretty good signing, and for as long as he got it for, and as quickly. I think that's also a key thing where they don't GMs, you know, smart GMs aren't going to let it play out like maybe Joe Sakic did. And, you know, he stuck with Duchesne for longer than he admits. And then things kind of just fall south. So I think it's, you know, if they're worth it, they're part of the plans. You sign them, you get them going. And especially if they're young and talented, you pay for it.
And the cap's only going to go up. So he's going to get more money to play with.
A little bit more relief. Yeah.
I mean, don't you think Steven Stamkos probably looks at this contract and he's like, damn it, can I rewrite mine? Like, can I get a little more scratch on this if I'm doing it longer?
I don't know, because at this point, I don't think he's ever going to produce as much as Kucherov is. I think Kucherov's that guy, but I think Stamkos could possibly put in more goals, and you should get paid a little bit more if you are putting in the goals, but not necessarily, you know, another extra million. I don't think Stamkos is going to hold up. He got paid just fine. He's good to 2004. Or 2024.
Stammer's never hit 100 points either, so suck that, Stamkos.
Yeah. And it's all those guys who signed contracts back then, right? They're all, like, Crosby's looking at his contract and saying he wants over $10 million.
Look at Duncan Keith. Duncan Keith's making, like, $4.5 million. One of the best contracts in the NHL by far is that one. That turned out to be great for them. That guy's been money for them.
Part of me would think that some of those players would just kind of, like, I'll take a bridge deal, mostly because I have confidence in myself. And then in 2 years, that cap goes up. Other players sign more. I mean, it's a gamble, but at the same time, if you have that much confidence in yourself, why not maybe take like a lower term, wait, see what happens in a couple of years. All of a sudden, people are getting $1 million, $2 million a year for the next 8 years, you know. And then once you get to like, you know, 27, 28, then maybe you kind of go like, all right, I'm going long term.
So what do you guys think? What the fuck is going on with Erik Karlsson and Pierre Dorion? Like, why can't Pierre Dorion figure this out and get him traded? Like, what is he holding out for? There's two teams that have been noted as interested, right? It's Dallas and Tampa, to my knowledge. I think maybe Vegas might be in the background still, so maybe three teams. But by this point, I feel like we should have already heard about another team involved in this. I don't think there's a bidding war. Like, everybody knows what it's going to take to sign Erik Karlsson. He's got 1 year left on his deal that's paying him like $6.5 million. He's going to make $11 or $12 million. He's not going to take anything less than Drew Doughty. So all the people who could fit him in there, we already know who they are, and we already know what assets that Ottawa wants. What are they doing? I don't understand what their holdup is. They're going to lose this trade no matter what they do, and yet they're sitting there holding their balls hoping for something better. I don't understand what Pierre Dorion's doing, but I don't know, man. How do you guys feel about that?
I think Tampa is trying to get the cap to work because, like, we just talked a lot about, you know, they have some guys coming off, but they still have to sign Braden Point and Yanni Gourde. And if you're going to add re-signing Erik Karlsson to that for $11, $12 million with some of the big contracts you already have, I think that takes a lot to get it to work. Rumors were that they were trying to get somebody to take Ryan Callahan's contract, which it's something must have fallen through for that not to have got done, because it was so close to happening, and now we haven't heard anything about it. And then with Dallas, apparently Dallas doesn't want to include Miro Heiskanen, who they drafted third overall a couple years ago, and Ottawa is stuck on wanting him, which makes sense. So I would assume that's what's holding up both of them. In Vegas, I think they just can't really afford to get it done anymore, but it's unbelievable it hasn't happened. I mean, yeah, he's going to lose no matter what he does, but, you know, they were so close. There's TSN, somebody from TSN was reporting that it was done deal, and then, of course, it came out and saying it wasn't, but it was literally that close to being a trade, and then it all fell apart.
Maybe it's a jilted lover type scenario where, oh, yeah, well, if I can't have you, then no one can have you. And so he's just making their life more miserable, I guess. I guess at the same point, yeah, it's trying to find out where the best deal is, where the right fit is, where they can move contracts around. Unfortunately, in a salary cap era, it takes a little finesse. Sometimes you kind of think you have one thing lined up, and then when, you know, it comes time to sign it, maybe you go, well, maybe I can hold out for something else. Because sometimes I think GMs will maybe hold out and see who becomes more desperate when the season goes in. Like if San Jose goes down, they got plenty of cap room, and Brent Burns goes down with injury. At that point, they might have some room and definitely some cap space to maybe move things around and try and get Carlson. And, you know, it'll come at a premium, but they kind of are a little bit desperate in their own right. So it's maybe something that if it's not overwhelmingly great for Ottawa, they know they have a blue chip and they can maybe sit on it at least for this year, because they all know it's not going to happen for them this upcoming year. So it's let's hold on to it until someone's desperate enough to overpay.
We all know
they're not. No one's going to overpay.
Yeah, nobody right? is. Nobody will.
Because I feel like Carlson's value plummeted once all that shit came out about what's going on in that locker room. And nobody wanted to be around
the
that.
Owner yeah.
and the owner threatening to sell the team and all that shit. It's like they should have just got rid of him before anyone knew any of that. Instead, they've held on to him for so long and then lowball him on a contract and expect him to sign it. I don't get it. But on the flip side of things, Steve Yzerman does have to work that little magic wand he has over there, because if I'm any other team in the league, if you're calling me to take that shitty player named Ryan Callahan off your books, there's no way I'm helping you. Why? So you can win a Stanley Cup with Erik Karlsson on your all-star team, dude? I don't want to take a 5.8 cap hit for a guy who blocks shot on a penalty kill. I want nothing to do with that. I don't understand why that's even being entertained. I know that Darren Dreger came up, and that was like one of the things that popped up on Twitter. Like, oh, you know, they're saying Ryan Callahan's in talks going back to New York. Why the hell would New York take that guy? I mean, that just goes to show you that all these GMs are so stuck in their old school mentality of, oh, he's a good guy in the room. I got to have him back on my team for leadership. It's like, Jesus, man. If Ryan Callahan moves off the books, in my opinion, Steve Yzerman is the greatest GM of all time. If he's able to get Carlson and move Callahan, that's magic. And then and not have to give up a guy like Braden Point, that would be absurd beyond that. But I don't know, man. If I'm Dallas, I give up my prospect and take Carlson and go for a run. I don't know what they're thinking about doing that there. I would give almost any player off the Ducks roster just about.
Let's just send him back to Florida with Mike Hoffman.
You're thinking like me now, Eddie. I can only F with people the most.
How can we ruin your life?
Yeah.
All right, let's hop off the Tampa bandwagon. Let's get on over to the Ducks. Adam Henrique signs a contract because, you know, Bob Murray wants to get younger and faster. So he signs a soon-to-be 29-year-old Adam Henrique
to a
long-term deal of – wait, what's his deal, Jay? He's got 5 years
at
$29.25 million, $5.85 cap hit. And again, another situation where you have a guy who still has another year on his contract. Look, I know I just kind of wanted to, you know, throw up all over Bob Murray on that real quick. But the truth of the matter is I don't really hate it. I don't really feel like he overpaid given the situation the Ducks are in with Ryan Kesler possibly not playing. That's still a rumor out there. And even if he does, we don't know what kind of Ryan Kesler we're going to get. I think the term's a bit much. And you're going to pay a guy well into when he's, you know, mid-30s and you got him stuck at a 5.8 cap hit. He's a 50-point guy. I don't love it. I don't hate it. I understand this necessity, though. I'm not like every other Ducks fan that's freaking out about it online. But certainly don't think it's something that needed to be done right away. But either way, it's a guy who fit in seamlessly, like he said. And apparently, he's a Mighty Ducks fan. So by all means, Bob, sign him and bring him on. I don't hate it, but I don't love it. How about you guys?
He's got that megawatt smile. The gorgeous looks. You got to pay for that. That's all I have to
easily.
Say.
That's it.
Easily. Cost of admission, right there. How many more female fans did we just gain?
At least a couple dozen.
I think it's awful.
I agree. I don't think it's awful. I mean, he can play the second, third line center. If Getzlaf goes down, he can even slot into the top line. He's a little bit up there in age. But at this point, by the time that contract's done, he's 33, 34, and he's Getzlaf's age. Look what Getzlaf's doing. Not saying he's going to produce like at Getzlaf level, but I mean, that gives you some concrete center depth moving forward. And let's be honest, our top two guys are up there in age, and we can't really hope for them to continue on producing, what Getzlaf needs to, or if, Ryan Kessler's even coming back. So you got to have a backup plan, at least a possible number one center, which he can be if he's playing on the, with Raquel on the wing or something like that. So, I mean, this is a guy who can kind of plug in anywhere, a good team guy, got some of that speed. Yes, he's a little bit older, but this was a contract that he had to get paid. He hadn't really been paid leading up to it. This was the one. So if you want his services, you were going to have to pay, or you're going to have to let him walk after next year.
I think he gets more in free agency than he gets now as well. I mean,
yeah.
Look at Paul Stastny's contract. They're relatively similar players in production. I mean, Stastny, he puts up about 40, 50 points. No longer. He doesn't put up 60, 70 like he used to. And he got paid 6.5.
Isn't he like 31?
Yeah, Stastny's 32. He got paid 6.5 for 3 years. And then Henrique, who puts up similar production, and he actually scores over 20 goals. He's a regular 20-goal guy. Got about $750,000 less than what Stastny got. So it's not awful. I think the term's a little long. I think maybe 4 years, maybe three or four years would have been a little bit better. But I think the way he fit into this team, and he gives them a little bit of depth and some cover if Kessler actually doesn't end up playing, it helps out. And he was great. I mean, the Ducks need goal scoring. He put up 20 goals. He's put up 30 before in his career. And I think when you look at some of the other contracts around the league, especially like a guy like Paul Stastny, who's pretty comparable, I think it's a decent deal, at least in the amount of money they gave him.
And that smile.
You got to go
with the
smile.
Main part,
you got to go with the smile.
Right in your checks. So Elias Lindholm gets paid with Calgary. He was working out a deal before he got traded from Carolina. He signs a 6-year, $29.1 million deal. I think this is a great signing for Calgary. They get him for 6 years. He's 23. Takes him all the way up to be right before he's 30. This guy's putting up 34, like around 45, 50 points a season. He had 44 last season. And he's going to be on a better team, I feel like, a better position for him. But kind of funny, he goes from Bill Peters to Bill Peters. So it'll be very interesting to see if that was part of the decision, if he liked Bill Peters and then went to Calgary, or if he didn't like Bill Peters and then got traded to Calgary, it would be even funnier. But I think that's a good price. $4.85 million cap hit for a young guy who puts up 40, 50 points. I think it's a great signing by the Flames.
Do you think he's getting paid because he was drafted fifth overall, like a little bit more than he should? I mean, his point totals aren't great. He put up 39, 39, 45, 44. Never hit 20 goals. I know, like 4.85 isn't a lot, but he hasn't really proved he's worth that. I know he's only 23, and maybe you play him with Gaudreau and Monahan, and that changes. But you're kind of hoping a lot that he can eventually hit 50, 60 points by paying him that much money over 6 years.
Yeah, I could see that being an issue for sure. I could see that they paid him for his draft status. But I think it's a worthy risk because it's under five, and then you got him for 6 years. If he does come through, that's a great signing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's like I said, if he works in their top six, if he gels well, which I could see happening with Gaudreau and Monahan, they really haven't had a right wing, I guess, of his caliber, because they were playing Ferland, I think, on that line for a bit. And they kind of were experimenting with different guys. Tkachuk doesn't really work on that line because he's a left wing and he's playing the second line with Backlund. So now they finally got a guy they can plug in there. And I think you know, he's more of a playmaker. He's, like I said, he's never put up 20 goals, but he's a regular, you know, a close to 30 assist guy. And you've got two guys who can regularly put the puck in the back of the net in Goodrow and Monahan. So I think that could work really well for him. I mean, Calgary's done some really good business. Dougie Hamilton, I agree, was a better player in that trade, but getting Elias Lindholm and getting Noah Hanifin, who they still have to sign, I believe, you know, they look like they could be one of the better teams, maybe the most improved team. I think they have a good shot at making the playoffs.
By the way, did Jason just drop off the call?
Yeah, he bailed.
It's so good.
He was done with it. He didn't want to talk about it.
I got a message. He's like, take it away. And I was like, dude, I know we talked about take it away. So everybody listening right now. Everyone listening right now, there's no reason to cut this out. I told him to say he has to drop out. He's like, he was way too embarrassed to say he had to leave. I don't understand his problem with that. But I'm sitting here waiting for him to chime in on Elias Lindholm. And it's like, Eddie keeps talking. I was like, oh, I thought we were pausing for Jay. And then I checked my Twitter. He's like, oh, I'm leaving. I had no idea he was gone. That's so
I heard funny. The Skype like close, and then I checked, and he was gone. And he just kind of bailed mid-call. Now we're calling him out for
it. He had a beer league game, for everyone wondering. So
thinks he can sneak away without us,
the rest of the night.
Without us getting on his case about it. Not happening.
What a douchebag. So, Elias Lindholm, I can see why you're kind of in the middle ground on that, on the fence. He has never put up 20 goals, never hit 50 points. But, I mean, maybe playing with better players, you get kind of like the Connor McDavid effect to a lesser degree with Monahan and Goodrow, right?
Yeah.
And maybe he starts pumping in 25 goals a season, 30, 40 assists. Then you got your money's worth there for 4.8. So we'll see how he does this year. And then I wanted to talk – I know we didn't talk about a bunch of guys that got signed for low money. Maybe they're not huge names, but Pat Maroon signs with his hometown, St. Louis Blues. He ends up taking a one-year deal at $1.75 million. I was surprised he didn't get paid more than this, to be honest with you, Eddie. I felt like he might have got, you know, $2.5-3.5 million. I mean, he's not a guy who can't put the puck in the back of the net. I mean, I feel like he could produce, and I think on this team he's going to show them that he can.
Listen, this is a bad deal for him as a player, right? We were hearing that he could get around $4 or $5 million over 5-6 years because of what he has been doing, which I think is an overpayment for him. But that's some guaranteed money that he's probably not going to get. Honestly, this is a great deal for St. Louis. He wants to go back home, play with them, and you know, we were talking about Calgary being one of the most improved teams. You look at what St. Louis has done; they've got a very good shot of going far. So I get it on his point, but man, he's leaving a lot of money on the table, and if he doesn't do good this year, because he's going to be playing on their third line, I would assume. He's got a lot of good players in front of him. He's not going to be given the opportunities he had in Anaheim playing with Ryan Getzlaffer and in Edmonton playing with Connor McDavid. And I don't know if he played with Taylor Hall in New Jersey, but his production kind of dropped a little bit compared to, of course, what he had with playing with two elite centers. So if he plays with like Tyler Bozak and puts up 30 points and goes back into free agency, he's not getting that money, and he's not getting that term that he could have got.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's a risk for him, but I know he wants to be in his hometown. He's probably always wanted to play there. He's got a no-trade clause on this deal, so I think if he starts, you know, putting some pucks in midway through, maybe they get another deal done, right?
Yeah.
But they still have some guys to sign. They have a lot of guys if they want to keep them around. They got a lot of young players that are RFAs that they have to look at signing here, and I think they have – let's look at their cap space – they only got $3 million. So a lot of these guys aren't going to make a ton of money, but you got to pay them league minimum or more because, I mean, a guy like Robbie Fabry made $925,000 last year. And after
that's
next
his
season,
contract now.
Him.
I think he signed. But that depends. I mean, he had a really bad injury. I'm surprised he's actually back. So if he comes, like you said, if he does 40, 50 points, then they got to pay him. But I think they're wary of what he could actually be because of that injury. They haven't really seen him play. So I guess in that sense, like, the deal's pretty good because if you do sign him to the long-term deal and he's just a bum, right, and he can't play anymore because of that injury, then you're screwed because you signed him to a good deal. And then if on the flip side, if he does really well, now you have to pay him next year. So it's a tough decision to make, especially a guy coming off an injury like that.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. And they got a lot to think about at the end of this season, so... But solid for Pat Maroon. I thought he was worth a little bit more, but I'm glad to see him. He's excited to go back and play in St. Louis. Let's go ahead and shift gears here, man. I want to talk to you about the trade that happened. I know we're a few days late getting to it. We didn't have a show last week. But the Chicago Blackhawks, always finding a way to circumvent the cap, always finding a way to make things happen. They're able to move Marian Hossa, and a guy who's essentially retired. He has some sort of skin condition where he was like constantly in pain. His gear was, he was allergic to his gear or something like along those lines. Was able to be put on a team with Pavel Datsyuk and Chris Pronger out in Arizona,
and
right?
David Boland.
They're still on the payroll.
A bunch of guys. I don't think they're still on the payroll, but they're creating some sort of like all-star team of guys who don't play anymore with Datsyuk, Pronger, Boland, Marian Hossa. John Chayka lives for these type of deals, it seems like. I mean, he's, if any GM takes advantage of that extra cap space more than anybody else, it's John Chayka, because he's done this multiple times. Four off the top of my head, I'm sure he's probably done more than that. I think it's a good deal for Arizona. I mean, they get Vinny Hinostroza. They get Jordan Osterley, who's pretty good. They get a third-round pick, and they give up pretty much nothing. And Marcus Kruger finally finishes the pinball machine and bounces all the way back to Chicago, where he started when flipping between Phoenix and flipping between Carolina, and now he's back in where that all began. So it's not a bad trade. I get it. Hossa, it's a cap write-off. They're essentially just going to pay him his money, and then that's it.
Isn't that weird, though, how that works out? Like, as a fan, does that bother you that teams are able to do that, to get rid of a bad contract at the end of a player's career? And, like, this was supposed to be the time where the Hawks would have to, like, reload and rebuild.
Yeah.
And I feel like that they're just able to get rid of money. You know what I mean? To get rid of dead money off their roster. I don't know how I feel about that.
A little bit, but most of the time it happens is because guys can't play anymore. I mean, the Datsyuk one for me is a little bit, like, okay, that's not fair. He just went to the KHL, and now they're dumping that contract. Detroit can, so they can rebuild a little bit easier. Or I think they even went for it after he left. So that one kind of rubs me the wrong way. But I mean, the Hossa one, he can't play anymore. And I know, like, if some team is willing to take on his contract and you got to pay to get rid of it, I guess that's just business, right? And the same was for Pronger, because he couldn't play because of his injury. And I believe it was the Flyers had to get his salary off the books. And Dave Boland was the same with an injury as well. David Clarkson, Nathan Horton, like all these guys. Joffrey Lupul, like they can't play anymore because of injury. So I understand teams trying to move their contracts and get out from underneath them. But it's just for me, the Datsyuk situation is the one that kind of, I think, is a little bit unfair.
Yeah, I mean, the Datsyuk one kind of sucks because he didn't really want to play in Detroit. He wanted to go home to his family in Russia and play in the KHL. And I know his ankles or something was bothering him, right, where he had issues. But Marian Hossa, it just, we all kind of knew the contract was kind of bogus from the start. And yeah, the way it was front-loaded like that, we knew at the end he was never going to play all the way through. But I don't know if I love it, man. Maybe I'd feel differently if it was a Ducks player and the Ducks were having issues with the cap and they had to get rid of somebody. But at this point, I don't understand how it's fair for other GMs to be able to look at this and be like, oh, yeah, go ahead. Like, this is not a problem. And the league's okay with it. The league totally passes the trade. Just move around dead money around.
They shouldn't have just, write it off. Like, if a guy gets injured like that, should it just not, like, if it's for sure that he's never coming back, should they not just void it? Like you can't plan for it, right? Like,
I feel like that's okay. If they could somehow prove it where he's not able to.
Well, you just need to do a medical test.
He's 39, and he's got 3 years left.
Yeah, like in Pronger's case, like, you know, he just couldn't pass concussion tests. He couldn't come back and play. So in that sense, like, write it off. In Hossa, I mean, he can't come back. Nathan Horton with his back, he can't come back. So at that point, just write it off. Then you don't have these dumb trades where guys are trying to move the salary cap for guys who are never going to play again. And then it avoids the situation with Datsyuk, where now they're kind of stuck with it and say, if he's not playing in the NHL, you can't trade his contract. You got to pay it out if he doesn't have an injury. Then you don't have these types of trades. And you know, the teams can't get out from under that if a guy decides to go to the KHL, which doesn't happen often. So, I mean, in that sense, Datsyuk would have screwed over the Red Wings. But, you know, if he's not hurt, if he's just choosing to go to another league, you should probably have to pay the rest of the contract you signed him to.
Yeah, I mean, maybe do something like this, like where if he decides that he wants to retire because he's injured, right?
Yeah.
Because I think currently if you retired, they don't pay you the rest of your contract, if I understand that correctly. So I think that's why these guys stay on long-term IR forever until their contracts are up, because they lose out on money.
So yeah, Kovalchuk lost out on money,
retire,
right? when he retired.
Yeah.
So
I think if you retire because of an injury, maybe the league needs to look at it where they just have to, okay, fine, the team pays you off the rest of the money up front, done.
That makes sense. I can see why that
I mean, maybe.
Then.
Maybe the team, maybe broke teams don't want to do that, right?
Well, I can see why a player wouldn't want to do that. Of course, you don't want to like throw away millions of dollars, so they're just not going to retire. The team's just
or maybe just have it not count against the cap. If the guy has a career ending injury, how about it doesn't count against the cap? Like, you have to pay that guy no matter what, but it doesn't count against the cap.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And I mean, the LTIR to some extent helps that, but it doesn't. You should just, if he's never going to play again, you should just get full relief from that cap. What's the point? Why are you playing a guy, having to pay a guy on your salary cap? Yeah, sure, give him his the money he's owed, but why? Like, it's for competitive balance, right? So how does paying a guy who no longer plays in the league help with competitive balance? It hurts the team that has to do it. It's not their fault that he had a career-ending injury. Like, I mean, if Getzlaff goes down with, like, don't want this to happen, but if Getzlaff goes down with a career-ending injury next season, the Ducks are stuck paying that $8.5 million when they shouldn't be. Because
you
can't predict
you,
that from happening, but they would be stuck with that $8.5 million contract, and they would be in the same situation that Chicago is trying to move it.
So the league's got to figure something out about these. It's kind of a joke that it's able just to move around money like that. But let's get on to some big news. The Ducks announced they're going to go ahead and retire Paul Kariya and Scott Niedermeyer this season. Coming around, the numbers are going to the rafters: a 9 and a 27. It will be forever remembered at Honda Center. I'm pretty stoked about it. We'll dive deeper on the Ducks aspect of things on Forever Mighty if you guys want to tune into the our other podcast this weekend. But Eddie and I are diehard Paul Kariya fans. He's my favorite player as a kid growing up. He's one of the main reasons why I started watching the Ducks. It's pretty cool. It almost feels like it's overdue for me because I feel like he's been retired for so long just because I'm a huge Ducks fan. So he hasn't been on the team since they went to the finals the first time. So to me, it feels like a long time coming, even though he retired, I think, in 2013.
Yeah, for sure. And I think on some part that's on Paul, right? That I think he just didn't want it to happen. And he said before that he thinks some of the guys who won the Stanley Cup should go in before him. And some people believe that's why Scotty's number is kind of going in at the same time. That, you know, Paul said that he wants to see a guy who won the Cup or a guy who deserves it, in his words, to go in before he goes in. So now Scotty goes in. Not that Scotty doesn't deserve it, but Scotty goes in, Paul goes in, which is overdue. Great to see him go in. I mean, I thought nothing against Timu, but with Paul retiring sooner, I thought his number should have been first and then Timu after. But I guess, again, that's kind of Paul's decision. But it's finally great to see him back with the organization in some sense. We saw that a little bit last year. We got a small taste of that, and now more with what we saw with the Hall of Fame, and then now with the jersey retirement, hopefully he can be around a little bit more.
Yeah, and the word on the street is, man, is that we got tickets to that game through a good buddy of mine, and you're going to be able to fly in from Toronto to come to that game. So even better for
it's
us.
Great how that worked out.
We'll
didn't
have to figure out
the
logistics
happening.
Of that.
We were just going to go see them play
Buffalo.
Yeah,
we were talking about you coming down that weekend just randomly. we're like, hey, let's go watch the Buffalo game because Rasmus Dahlin's going to be in town. And then the Vegas game will be before. We'll do a watch party or something. And all of a sudden, like a week later, the Ducks are like, hey, we're going to have Paul Kariya retire his jersey on that day.
Yeah.
Just so it all freaking lined up, man. So I think that's cool. I just want to, I mean, obviously really cool being who he is to me and to you. But Scott Niedermeyer, do you feel like that was kind of a too soon? Or did you feel like it was going to happen inevitably? Some people think that Jean-Sébastien Chiguer deserves to go to the rafters before. I think Scotty was pivotal in getting the Ducks to their Stanley Cup, obviously, right? And he was the guy that pushed them over the edge.
Yeah, so I think if I had to pick, like, three guys off the top of my head in Ducks history who deserve to go, it'd be Timu, Paul, and Scotty. I'm kind of in the camp where I believe, you know, Chiguer didn't do quite enough throughout his entire career to get up there. I'm sure he eventually might if, you know, in the time between these retirements and Getzlaff and Perry, right? You would assume that they'd eventually get up there. So sometime in between those, maybe we'll see Chiguer just for them to kind of fill space. But yeah, I mean, Scotty deserves it for sure. The question comes with a lot of fans saying, you know, did he spend enough time here in his 5 seasons with Anaheim out of the 18 that he played to really be considered a legend for the Anaheim Ducks. I think he did. I mean, he was a captain. He won them the Stanley Cup. He won the Conn Smythe in that year. So I think he's done enough. But it does raise that question, really. Like, when is it considered enough, like, contribution to that team to really be worth a jersey retirement?
Well, yeah, you could just expand that over the league, right? Like, what does it take for anybody, not just Anaheim, to have your number retired? And for me, I feel like it's kind of done just at will, like whatever the fans want, which I guess is it's for the fans and the player. The fans want to be there on that special night. You know, they got memories growing up, and, you know, fans are fanatics, right? So they're really biased into how good a player was. And I remember growing up thinking Jaguar was so amazing, and he had that amazing playoff run, no doubt. But his numbers, I feel like they're maybe a little short. I mean, for the era, he wasn't a bad goaltender at all. But I don't think that they win a cup without Scotty at all, or without Timu. No. And then, you know, Paul wasn't part of that team that won. He was there the prior Stanley Cup run. But Paul was, you know, the first pick, and was he like something the franchise never built around to give him a chance to do it. But for me, when it comes to just a general, you know, topic, when someone says, like, you know, what does it have to mean to be retired by a teammate? I think you have to be the best player on that team for a certain span of time. Like, you have to be that guy for more than one season. You can't just be a fly-by-night guy. You got to be the best player on the team at some point in your career for a long span in order to get your number in the rafters, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, you have to make some significant contribution like Scotty's done. I mean, you look at one of the most historic teams in the National Hockey League, the Montreal Canadiens, and some of the names they have retired, we all know them. I mean, Jean Beliveau, Ken Dryden, Guy Lafleur, Jacques Plante, Henri Richard, Maurice Richard, Larry Robinson, Patrick Waugh. I mean, you know, these are all legends in the game and guys that have made significant contributions to the Montreal Canadiens. And you can look at any team and really say that, you know, those guys have made big contributions. But with Jaguar, as much as I love him, I just feel like he hasn't done enough. And I get he was there and he won the cup and he's had his moments, but I think consistency is a big part of that as well. You have to consistently be one of the best players for that team, like you said. I just think he hasn't done that. And, you know, when you look at some of the names retired by a lot of the different teams in the leagues, you don't really see many guys, and you could say, oh, he didn't really do enough to get that number up there. I mean, the majority of them have been with the team for a long time or made a significant contribution to that organization.
I 100% agree with you. Or you could be like the Minnesota Wild and retire the number one for the fans back in the year 2000, which I think was their first year, if I remember correctly.
It's worse that it's in the first year. Like, that's so much worse.
We retired
worse.
It for you guys. Like, they've never had a team before. It's so strange.
And I didn't even know that's the only banner.
The only one in the rafters because they haven't won a cup. That's true.
Yeah, and there's no other jerseys retired. I mean, maybe they have the Minnesota North Stars ones up there. I don't know how they – I don't know if those were Dallas or if they're in Minnesota. I would assume they'd be in Dallas because they're still part of that franchise, right? I would assume the three –
Yeah, that's the team.
Yeah, I would assume – I think there's two Minnesota North Stars, Bill Goldsworthy and Bill Masters. And I would assume those are up in Dallas's arena, not in the Wild arena. So literally when you go to XL Energy Center and you look up into the rafters, you just see a retired number one for Minnesota Wild fans. And that's
so
it.
Dumb.
It's so bad. And I mean, like, it would be bad anytime, but for me, the fact that it was retired, like, their first game of their first season just makes it it's like so much more corny. I mean, you like the only two non-player jersey numbers retired are that one and the Vegas shooting victims from last season. That one makes sense, and then this one is just awful.
No, dude, 100%. I'm with you. I don't get it. I don't know what the hell that ownership was thinking back then, but apparently they thought it was a good idea, and so did their marketing team. Before we wrap the show, we have a listener question, and strangely enough, we have actually three, one from each social media platform in the middle of July. So God bless these people for giving us something to talk about here. We'll start with Facebook, and Dave Rodriguez has a question, Ducks related. It says, do any of you feel like Henrique's contract is a year too long or just right? Eddie, I'll let you go ahead and take a crack at that. I know we discussed it a little bit, and I think I know where you're going with it, but how do you feel about Henry?
Yeah, I think it's about a year too long, or maybe two. I think 4 you can justify it. 4 years isn't too bad because it's essentially like 5 because he does have that extra year on his contract for next season at $4 million. At 4, it takes him to 32, I think, and then he would turn 33 by the time the contract was ended at the end of that season. So that doesn't seem as bad. 5 for me is just what gets me. It's now the second longest contract the Ducks have behind Cam Fowler. So it eclipses Getzlaff, Perry, Kessler. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just a little long for you know, he's a great player, 50-point guy, 20-goal guy, but for 5 years into 33, there's no guarantee he's going to still be doing that.
So Scott from Twitter, our hashtag Scott hashtag, I guess you could call that, on Twitter says, when's Richie getting traded, LOL? Can you give a breakdown on opinions on Henrik's new contract? Does that mean he will slide into his second C if Kess is done? So we already talked about Henrik's contract. Yeah. But let's talk first about the Richie part. Do you think Richie's getting traded? I know he kind of threw it in tongue-in-cheek, but do you think that's actually going to happen, or do you think the Ducks are going to sign him?
Nah, I don't think he gets traded now. I still believe that the only way he gets traded is there's, like, a package. I don't think you get enough for just him. I don't think any team really is looking for, like, just trading for a fourth-line winger in Nick Richie, that they have to go through the process of re-signing him, so I don't think he gets traded unless they package him in a deal maybe with Silfverberg or something and try and go out and get like a top six winger like Pacioretty or Skinner or Simmons, which doesn't look likely either.
Lord knows they're not going to do.
Yeah, so I think he comes back. He probably plays fourth line for the Ducks, which isn't awful. I mean, he's a 20-30-point guy on your fourth line. It's not bad. He can score about 15 goals, so yeah, I think he's productive there. Again, the thing that hurts him is that thing hanging over his head that he was drafted 10th overall. That's what really
I was just going to say, if he was a third-round draft pick, nobody would care what he was making.
No, it would actually have pretty good production. I mean, we talked about last year on the postgame show, I think in the stretch when he was playing with Henrik and Kasha, how he was kind of doing well and nobody was talking about it, and that was like amid all the trade rumors at the deadline. And he was actually the third most productive Duck, I think, in the month of January, I believe, where he was just putting up secondary assists, putting up some goals, and playing really well when that third line was doing really well. So I don't mind him. I actually would like him back as a fourth liner. It's when he gets up and they try and plug him into the top six, and it just doesn't work. And that's just not the type of guy he is.
What about Henrik? I mean, I think that him sliding into 2C if Kess is done or if Kess is still injured, obviously we hope Kessler's back and better than ever and fully recovered by the start of the season. But that Elliot Friedman report was very troubling a few weeks ago. I think Henrik would be fine on a second line. I don't have a problem with that at all. I feel like he could do it. They brought him in at a time when Kessler and Getzlaff were down, and they were having Derek Grant be first center. So Henrik could definitely skate in the top six anywhere. He's very versatile, and I think that he'd be just fine there. But let's hope Kessler's back and healthy. But it's been real quiet on that front. I haven't heard a lot of news coming out from anywhere about Ryan Kessler whatsoever. So it seems like this signing is maybe a telltale sign that Kessler is having issues and they're going to need Henrik in the long term. But that's just kind of my jaded opinion. I hope it's not the case, but I don't have a problem with Henrik sliding into 2C if there's a problem.
Yeah, I think they just don't know with Ryan Kessler. I think nobody really knows if he's 100% or not, and the signing kind of highlights that fact that, you know, they've locked him up for so long that if Ryan Kessler, you know, there was talks in Elliot Friedman's report that he was not considering retirement, but that might eventually have to be an option if it became too much for him. And if that was the case, you've now got Adam Henrik, who can step in. He's been a second-line center throughout most of his career in New Jersey. I think he seamlessly slides in there, and then, you know, maybe I doubt it, but maybe they move Raquel back to center, but I doubt they do that with how well he worked on left wing, or you bring up Troy Terry or Sam Steele and play them on the third line. So I think there's a seamless transition there, but I would still love to have, you know, those three at center and Getzlaff, Kessler, and Henrik. If Kessler is 100%, we looked at how he was playing at like probably less than 50% last year. I don't want another season of Kessler like that. I don't want him to have to come back until he's 100% ready to come back, because it's really not worth it for him, and it's not worth it for the organization to throw him out there at anything less than 100%.
I totally agree with you on that one. The final question comes from Instagram. Kyle Pickering, 2014, says, does the addition of Paul Stastny jumpstart Thomas Tatar in Vegas? I think it does. I think Paul Stastny can work well in a group, and he's going to be second line center. And I think that would give the best opportunity for Thomas Tatar to play alongside him. And I feel like that was a good move in bringing Paul Stastny. And maybe he got paid a little bit too much, but he's not a bad player. And having a strong second line center doesn't, you know, do anything but help you.
Yeah, that's my boy Thomas Tatar. I want him to do well. I was always hoping that he would come over to the Ducks. Never happened, but I want to see him do well. He was a great player in Detroit, on and off with his offensive production, but he's always had great underlying numbers. And I think with a guaranteed role in their top six next year, it will probably still be Carlson, Marchessault, and Riley Smith on the top line, and then you would expect that second line is something around Tatar, Stastny, and Alex Tuch. I think he could do really well in that line. You've got Tuch, who's a goal scorer. Stastny is more of a pass-first guy now, and Tatar is kind of a mix of the two, and I think he can get back to being a 20-goal, 50-point guy if he consistently plays on that second line and maybe get some second power play time as well.
Yeah, I think so, man. But that is it for us today, unless any of you got any hidden agendas we haven't found out about yet.
No, I was going to trip Jason Moore for leaving the call early, but I think we've been ruthless enough so far.
Yeah, man. I mean, what a big baby just jumping out of the call like that.
God,
like,
he's got to go.
Couldn't even say, all right, guys, I got to hit my beer league game.
Yeah.
He's
got to do it in the DMs. He's got to slide in your DMs and say, take it away, guys. I just left.
So random. I couldn't believe it. I almost was like, do we have to call him back? But, yeah, screw you, Jay. Hope you lose your game. That's it for us. You guys know where to find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, the Puck Guys Podcast. Go ahead and drop us an email, drop us a tweet. If you would love to be so kind as to go onto iTunes, we haven't had a great review in a long time. I hate pushing for them. I hate being that guy, but it does help us to get out and about, especially in the summertime. Any of you listeners, if you have a minute to give us a 5-star, that'd be amazing. If not, that's cool, too. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of weeks or sooner if something crazy happens to Carlson. But have a good one, guys.